Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guest is Dr. James Hodge, Director of the Susan Hurt Hagen Center for Community Outreach, Research, and Evaluation at Penn State Barron.
Welcome to Barron Talks, where my guest this week is Dr. James Hodge, who is the director of the Susan Hurt Hagen Center for Community Outreach, Research, and Evaluation, an outreach effort of the School of Humanities and Social Sciences right here at Penn State Barron. That's a bit of a mouthful, Jim, but welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
James, why don't you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about, you've had some really big news. Tremendous.
Yes.
You were,
still blown
so
away.
That we've made a big announcement about the new home for CORE. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah. So through a sort of combination of private support and university support, the Federal House, which is a building on campus, I believe the oldest structure in Harbor Creek, is about to undergo a significant renovation and expansion to form the new home of CORE. And we're really blown away. It was a building that I believe, if I remember correctly, was built in 1838. So it's been around for a while. And back in the day, it served as a safe house for slaves that were traveling the Underground Railroad.
Yes, it did.
And I think though the context is radically different. Obviously today, if you think about sort of what that building I think stood for back in the day, hope, opportunity. I think a lot of the things that we're going to talk about today through CORE sort of stand for the same things. We try to promote those same sort of CORE, partial pun intended, principles. And I think it's just pretty special and unique that within the walls of that building, some of those same principles will be sort of carried forward today, as we move in through the gift. And we're just really excited for all the opportunities that allows.
And I like that idea of hope and opportunity, because that's really what you embody in all the work that you're doing at CORE. And what I'd like to do today is get into more detail about that.
Right.
CORE is a great asset. And I know that word is used a lot for the community, but it is a tremendous resource. And I'd like our listeners to understand that. I'll just jump back for a moment and add a little bit about the Federal House. The beautiful thing about that gift is it's a second gift. It was actually originally the land was given to us by the Smith family. We've got the Larry and Catherine Smith Chapel here on campus. So it's a nice way to see that come full circle, because we've been looking for a use for that house for a long period of time. So that brings me to my next question. Mm-hmm. So this is a large project. It's $6.3 million in total with all of the funding that we have for this. It's going to provide additional space. So it's not just, people driving by, they see that house there. It's not real large. So we're adding to it. Why don't you tell us, give us some of the details. What's this going to do in terms of space? How is this going to add to your mission?
Yeah, so, we are we're in a location now where space certainly is a limitation. We know that there are more schools, more organizations that want to work with us than we sort of currently can with the size of our team now. So we know that we need to grow, and we're constantly applying for grants, and we want to grow our team, but we're in kind of a unique position now that if we grow like one more person, we don't really have space for that person to live. So this new building will do a few things for us, right? One, it will allow us to, over time, grow our team, which I think will allow us to, have a broader reach into the community, nonprofits, community organizations that we work with, and youth, that we work with through our various mentoring programs. So that increased staff size over time is really going to be huge. Two, with different outreach, efforts, different initiatives, meetings that we have, with community organizations, oftentimes, most of the times, that has to happen off campus, right? Because we don't have, the space to do that. So I think this new building will allow us to bring the youth into the community to our home, to Barron, and really show off the beautiful campus that we have. I think it's going to be great for students to be able to see Barron at an early age, in middle school and high school, and get to experience our beautiful campus. And
well, why don't you talk a little bit more about? So I'll let everybody know we've gone through a preliminary design. Mm-hmm. Now we'll rehire architects and the building. We've got an idea of what the building looks like. We don't know exactly, but one of the core features you alluded to is there's a large programming training space. So why don't you talk about that and what you envision happening there?
Yeah. So a core, kind of my 20-second elevator pitch, you know, is at core, you know, we help youth and we help the community through mentoring, training, and evaluation. So kind of you can split core into two parts, community outreach and then the research and the evaluation. I think the training space provides a lot of opportunity in that community outreach arm through our mentoring and our training. So we deliver a number of mentor trainings for the community, both formal and informal mentor trainings for just citizens, teachers, you know, nonprofits that want to get around youth and to build positively into their lives. They need tools in order to do that. So we deliver those trainings. Sometimes they're smaller. Sometimes, you know, it's a, you know, an entire grade of a school. In this space, I think it's going to be flexible space to where we can configure it such that if we're doing a, you know, 20-person training or a 100-person training, we have the space to bring the community into core and into campus in order to deliver those trainings. And then, you know, we work with youth throughout the year. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll get a little bit later into the Youth Summit, which is kind of the largest expression throughout the year. But we do things on a smaller scale with youth, you know, throughout the year, and typically we're always traveling to do that stuff.
This will be an impressive and beautiful new home that they'll see there. And I think, you know, just seeing the renderings, I'm confident that it's going to have a real wow factor. But before we get to the Youth Summit, I want to go back in history. So let's talk about how we got to CORE to this point. It was established in 1998 through the very generous gift from Susan Hurt Hagen. What was the original mission of the center?
Yeah, the original focus was certainly to address the issue of teen pregnancy. We were sort of charged with the mission to, you know, work with a lot of the community agencies and groups that were doing a lot of really great work, but to sort of serve as a center that brought these folks together more sort of systematically and to think about ways to address and to improve the teen pregnancy rate. So that was maybe the first expression of kind of outreach that happened through CORE. CORE, the old name for CORE, so the Center for Organizational Research and Evaluation. So the research and the evaluation component was there from the beginning as well, and one of the original, you know, areas of focus for CORE was to work with community organizations to evaluate the different programming that they had throughout the community to, you know, address whether those things were working, and if not, you know, for a place with expertise to be able to offer suggestions to improve whatever it was that they were doing. So there was outreach. It sort of in the beginning lived largely in the area of teen pregnancy, and there was a, you know, a natural connection early on with the Union City school district, right? CORE, you know, founded by Dr. Carl Kalgren, was a faculty member and lived in Union City. So I think with he and Ms. Hagen, that was kind of a natural connection to focus in that area. So outreach, teen pregnancy, and then some kind of program evaluation was kind of the you know, historical foundation, I would say, of CORE back in 1998.
Let's stick with this original theme that you just talked about. So you were looking at teen pregnancy reduction, but did it work? 10 years later? I mean, can you attribute this to CORE? So why don't you tell us what happened?
Absolutely. So, you know, early on, I don't know exactly what year, but out of the Search Institute, there was identified this 40 developmental asset model, which I'm sure we'll get into. But essentially, it's a research-based framework that shows that the more of these assets that youth have, the more likely they are to be protected from various risk factors, right? So one example of that would be, you know, perhaps teen pregnancy. So it was working with the school district and with surrounding organizations to adopt this asset framework to really surround youth with this, you know, with this sort of net of school and community resources that we're trying to build protective factors into their lives and give them resources to make good choices and to make good decisions. So, you know, I think over time with a combination of that work, so Abby Bible is our positive youth development coordinator at CORE and does just a phenomenal job working with the area schools really intently with Union City. to really build these protective factors and these assets, you know, into USLIFE. So I think focusing that with the work that the community organizations were already doing, what we are seeing over time is this reduction in teen pregnancy, which is what, you know, you would expect given the research surrounding this developmental asset framework. So it's doing what it's intended to do, which is always a good sign to see.
The numbers, I mean, I don't have them right in front of me, but they're quite significant when you look at the graphs that show the reduction in teen pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's never a single factor, but as you pointed out, you put in this whole support system, and we've seen results, and those are important results. Mm-hmm. Well, you are listening to Barron Talks. My guest today is Dr. James Hodge, the director of the Susan Hurt Hagen Center for Outreach, Research, and Evaluation. And we are talking about the great work of CORE, our outreach center here on campus. So let's continue on. There was a second gift from Ms. Hagen in 2008 that expanded the mission of CORE, and they added things like truancy prevention, healthy youth development, initiatives. Can you talk more about that? What exactly did that mean for the center?
Yeah, sure. That was kind of a game changer. That was a pivotal time where you know, through that gift and through some of the early data that we had collected, we sort of discovered, hey, we're onto something here, right? With the developmental assets. And when you look at that model, right? So the 40 developmental asset model sort of breaks down what they call internal and external assets, right? These external assets are, you can kind of think of them as resources, tools that youth need to thrive, right? The internal assets, you can kind of think of as more sort of internal, like character traits, right? These are things that youth pick up through positive role models, right, mm-hmm. in their environment. And what the Search Institute was finding through their research, that the positive benefits of having more assets went beyond just teen pregnancy, right? It's more of sort of a global protecting from risk factors and promoting these protective factors. So when we started to use this framework to target things like, looking at markers like kids getting better grades, staying in school, less behavior problems, that's precisely what we found, right? Mm-hmm. When we really tried to kind of blow this up on a larger scale, we started finding data such that, A, assets were increasing over time as a result of being in the school and promoting assets. Makes sense.
Right.
But who cares? Why does that matter? And why that matters is our data showed that those students, again, they were getting better grades, they were getting in trouble less often, and they were staying in school longer. So it was giving them a chance to succeed. And I think that really kind of shaped a second chapter of CORE's vision and mission.
So let's take this word assets that you use. Is that like saying you're giving them a tool in their toolbox? How would you describe this to a parent and maybe their child's working with you? Is it a competency? Is it a skill?
I think it's yes and no, right? I think some of the external assets are things like a positive family environment, a positive connection to adults, getting outside and connecting with peers, right? And
your support structure.
Exactly, right? These internal assets are things like commitment to learning, an ability to cope positively to adversity, right? So some of them are sort of tools that youth use. Others are, I kind of just think of them as like structural elements, things in a young person's environment that they can look to in times of trouble and adversity so they can cope positively, with those challenges.
So let's say you start working with at-risk youth. They come in, they've got a lot of, I'll say, issues or things that they're dealing with in their life. How do you do an inventory of these assets? How do you help them understand that model?
That's a great question. So there are several measures to basically do an inventory of a school, kind of a school climate, to get a sense of how many assets youth have, you know, where they're getting the assets from, where are areas of strength, weakness. So we utilize a measure pretty extensively in Union City every year called the Developmental Asset Profile, and it does precisely that. It measures kind of the characteristics of the internal assets, external assets. Where are students really thriving? Where are some pockets of, hey, we need to really focus time and resources on building up those areas? Mm-hmm. And it also answers the question of where are they getting these assets? Are they getting assets from their peers? From their family, from the school, and we kind of take that and we can tailor a plan, kind of a programmatic plan to say, okay, we know they're doing well in this area. This, for the next year, we need to kind of hammer home this area to bring them up to a level of kind of thriving, right? And again, the research shows that the extent to which they can do that, it translates to all these positive outcomes down the road.
So the kids, they're not on their own on this. So you're communicating this to their support system as well?
Yeah, we do a lot of asset trainings for parents, community members, teachers, administrators, where we essentially teach them, you know, what are the assets, why are they important. The nice thing about this asset model is you don't need to have a certain certificate, a degree. You don't have to have a particular level of education. You can be it's informal mentoring. It's a framework that really capitalizes upon you're a mentor whether you really know it or not. Mm-hmm. So kids are looking up to you, and it can be as easy as walking by them and just looking them in the eye and saying, "Good morning. How are you today?" Right? That's simple. And you know, that might be the most positive thing that's happened in that youth's life, you mm-hmm. know, all week, right? And it really just sort of capitalizes on this kind of homegrown, organic, kind of within the school, these kind of easy ways to build in into the lives of youth. And you know, again, you can be an asset builder if you're a principal, a teacher, a cafeteria worker, a crossing guard, it doesn't matter, right? And so we try to do a lot of training in the community for these individuals just to kind of learn, you know, how, I guess, at times easy it can be, right?
I think that's one of the things that people don't often realize, and that is the impact that they have on others.
Oh,
and like you said, it's sometimes a lot simpler than you think. And someone may come back to you a few years later and say, "Oh, do you know you said this to me and it had that impact?"
Yeah.
And you really are trying to make that point with them, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. And we hear that of students that have you know, been involved in PYD programming over the years, sort of catching up with them later. You know, we hear these anecdotal stories of, you know what, like that really meant a lot, you know, and that time that you challenged me to improve, you know, a particular element in my school, and I built new connections with my peers and my teachers, and like that was a pivotal moment in my time as a high school student or a middle school student. Those are the stories, honestly, that kind of fuel us to come to work every day and to keep working with you.
Oh, those are great stories. Yeah. Let's just go a little further with this. What interests me is there's this popular idea right now. There's this notion of grit, and that you have to build grit. And I don't know if that's just a popular term, but is that similar to what you're trying to do with positive youth development?
It's certainly a large element, and also with our formal mentoring initiative out of CORE, the mentor project at Penn State Barron. I think at the heart of those you know, of those initiatives are things like grit. That's related very closely to another kind of, not buzzword, because it's been around for a while, but growth mindset.
Growth
right?
mindset.
We spend
absolutely.
A lot of time promoting growth mindset. These things are correlated. They're related. But really, it just gets to the fact of, you know, we all are going to struggle at some point. We are going to face an obstacle or a barrier, and we have one or two choices. We can kind of turn away and just say, you know what, I'm not going to deal with that, or we go down a path that's not a very healthy way to cope. Or we can look at that and say, all right, this is a challenge right now, but I'm you know, through struggling with this challenge, this presents an opportunity to create a better version of myself when I cross that hill and sort of get to the other end. And it really promotes this resiliency, this idea of I'm going to tackle this, again, using the tools and the resources mm-hmm. that I have at my disposal, and I'm going to come out the other end a better person, so that when I meet this challenge again, I know how to cope with it, and I'm now kind of a stronger person. So, you know, we you know, very much in the types of lessons that we deliver to youth, you know, we really try to tackle on these kind of cognitive malleable components, right? So grit, growth mindset. You can teach someone to have grit. You can teach someone to have a growth mindset. That's the great thing about it. You can take a student that has maybe what's called a fixed mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So a fixed mindset is, you know, I'm not good at this right now. I'm never going to be good at it. I'm just not even going to try. The pretty cool thing is you can take that student, and we've developed what we call a growth mindset intervention. It's a computer-based experience that these youth go through, and you know, as a result, we're showing this significant increase in their growth mindset. They're really transforming from more of a fixed to a growth mindset, and the research suggests that because of that, again, they're more likely to grow up to be caring, responsible, thriving adults. And so yes, these are very important things, and we work very hard and in addressing them and teaching our students to have grit, to be resilient, to have a growth mindset, because we know that these things are malleable.
And I'd just like to add one more point here. I mean, this sounds easy in practice.
Yeah.
And I think it's fairly well known. I mean, this idea that you can choose your response to a given situation
mm-hmm.
is perhaps an enlightening observation when somebody gets there,
mm-hmm.
but they have to build confidence along the way.
Sure.
So they can't say, I'm going from here to there. So it's they build confidence in little steps.
Absolutely, and it's hard to do on your own, right? So again, the purpose of we are trying to surround our youth with caring adults who have the tools, right? Mm-hmm. Through the training, to have the tools to A, recognize when someone is struggling, and to then feel confident enough and sort of to have the empathy to say, hey, like, you're not alone in this. You're gonna have to make the mistake, right? But it's much easier to put yourself in sort of that space where you can make that mistake and learn from that mistake when you look around and see that, hey, I have adults that like care about me, and I'm not the only person, you know, in this place. And we work hard of sort of building that that environment for our youth.
So we've been talking about at youth risk. Mm-hmm. Are there any youth, or any particular ages, groups that are particularly at risk that we need to be looking at?
Yeah, typically the literature focuses on two groups in particular. One is sort of infancy through early childhood. At that time, that there's what we call kind of a critical period where the extent to which they have secure positive attachment to caregivers. We know that longitudinally, like down the road, that predicts a number of positive outcomes. The extent to which they have an unhealthy sort of connection or attachment to caregivers is, corresponds to negative outcomes. The other age range is in adolescence, right? This is a time where youth are really looking outside themselves to define themselves. They're looking to what media has to say, mm-hmm. what their peers have to say to identify, who they are. We know that, girls are socialized to be people pleasers, right? The research shows that, that can result in, they care a lot about what other people think. That can correspond to higher rates of anxiety and sort of depression mm-hmm. down the road. Boys are socialized to really not show emotions unless that emotion is anger. It's mm-hmm. okay to show anger. It's okay to express anger. And of course, that can lead to emotion regulation issues and responding, to situations in anger that would be inappropriate. And so, there are gender differences, gender differences and sort of age ranges as well, where these things are really important. So it's kind of a combination therein.
Well, you add into this mix we have now that's really new in the history of humankind, which mm-hmm. is social media.
Sure.
Mobile phones, technology, mm-hmm. and it brings it to a whole new level. And it appears, and I don't know if it's been determined yet, mm-hmm. but it certainly looks like we're seeing a real increase in mental health issues yep. with our adolescent right
the
now.
Research Are those things? Agree.
Yeah. What's the research say about this?
Yeah, precisely what you just said. This increased screen time is correlating with some of these. Sort of negative mental health, outcomes. Again, particularly if you look at adolescence, right? How these young people are defining themselves, what they think about themselves, is determined by what they're scrolling through on mm-hmm. their phone. That's a little terrifying, right? Yes. Because we yeah. know, unfortunately, that a lot of the stuff out there for consumption that they're scrolling through is not really building this sort of positive self-image and sort of healthy coping, right? And so we do spend time when we work with our youth, particularly in the Mentor Project, to talk about this very issue and to try to build opportunities to where they can form this sense of belonging with their peers, with positive adult role models, where they can go do things away from their phones and away from their iPads and whatever device that is, to try to in some part, if not reverse, help attenuate this trend that we're seeing with this increased exposure to screen time, kind of leading to unhealthy.
Yeah, I don't think
outcomes.
It's not going away, but
no.
We need to figure out how to deal with it yeah. and maybe change behaviors, and that's not easy, but
agreed.
It seems to me that is what has to be done. Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. So what signs should parents, teachers, and others look for in adolescents who might be struggling?
Yeah. I think chief among them is, anything that seems abnormal, out of place, atypical for either for that particular student or something that would be out of place for that, someone in that sort of age cohort. Certainly, if someone talks about wanting to harm themselves or others, certainly that's going to be a sign, right? It's kind of like, when you're in the airport, if you see something, say something. It's kind of mm-hmm. like if you notice something that just doesn't seem quote unquote normal, seems a bit atypical, to try to address that in some way. Don't just sort of let it go,
mm-hmm.
Because in some instances that can result in outcomes that are certainly not good.
Absolutely. So tell me, what schools and community groups does CORE partner with to provide the safety net? Who do you work with?
Sure. So I'd be here for an hour to sort of list them all. You know, where we are, Erie is an awesome place where we have just people doing really amazing things in our community. Just schools off the top of my head, you know, that we've worked with, certainly have a long standing relationship with the Union City School District. Mm-hmm. We work a lot with Erie's public schools.
You're increasingly going into the Erie School District.
Yes, we are. That's definitely an area of intense interest for us to sort of, you know, build in and to support, one of the initiatives that really seems to be growing the community schools model, right? Mm-hmm. Supported by United Way. Certainly they're a large supporter of our positive youth development initiative out of CORE. We work with Iroquois School District, Girard School District, Community Country Day School, Barber Center. We really
You're
work with a lot
by
of
Erie Insurance,
yes.
Erie Community
yeah, we
Foundation.
Work very closely.
You've been able to get some really nice grants that help you
yes.
extend the scope
yeah, we just
of your
received
work.
A large Community Foundation grant that's going to allow us to start having a broader reach in the community, which is really special.
Well, CORE also has this, you bring high schools to campus for this annual youth summit, and mm-hmm. it's coming up soon, where they learn leadership skills and others. Why don't you tell us about the youth summit?
Sure. So the next youth summit is going to be May 17th, and it's here at McGarvey Commons at Penn State Barand. And the youth summit is perhaps my favorite element of PYD, maybe my favorite piece of CORE. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the PAYS data, the Pennsylvania Youth Survey, there are a number of themes that come out, two that relate very closely to the youth summit. One is students are saying that they don't have opportunities in their schools to do positive things, right? Two, they say, even when I do something positive, adults don't seem to care, right? They don't, I don't feel like mm-hmm. the adults around me are really taking notice and really caring. So our youth summits are structured that in the fall, they come in and we have, over 150 students. We have over 50 different folks from different community organizations that come in. It's really a time to have the time and the space to start coming up with different ideas and projects that these students can go into their schools and to improve their school climate, to maybe to go outside of their school into their community mm-hmm. and to do wonderful things, let's say with veterans in their community or elderly individuals. We hear about some of these really great projects, and it really is that time. Students are saying, I don't have the opportunity. This is that opportunity, right? And teachers, administrators show up, and it's just a really great event to really protect that time to say, over this next year, here are the things that I'm going to do to make my school a better place. In the spring, those same students come back, the community organizations, the teachers, the administrators, and it's really a time to celebrate the incredible work that the youth are doing in their schools and in their community. There's a community panel that votes on some of these projects and some of the outstanding youth, and it really is a time to say, hey, there are adults right. in your community that care very strongly about what you're doing.
You close the loop for them. You bring them back
sure.
afterwards, and you show them that they have
sure.
real impact.
These kids are incredible, and it's special to recognize the amazing work that they do.
Yeah, I think the stories that come out of that mm-hmm. are great. But another signature initiative is the Mentor Project. Mm-hmm. You match middle school kids with trained college and other professionals, mm-hmm. our students and others in the community. Tell us how that works.
Yeah, so the Mentor Project is kind of what you think of, kind of the quintessential mentoring, the formal mentoring, right? So the Mentor Project, there is a curriculum. It's a socio-emotional curriculum. It's the Mentor Project is run by Mary Baird, Nate McGee, and certainly Sharice Nixon, has had a large hand in that program as well. But it works with college students at Penn State Barand and community members who receive this training on best practices in mentoring. We use elements from the National Mentoring Partnership. It's the premier kind of national mentoring structure where we teach these community members and students how to be an effective mentor, and then they receive this socio-emotional curriculum. It teaches our students things like, again, how to respond positively in the face of adversity. We try to build grit, growth mm-hmm. mindset, mm-hmm. resiliency. We try to increase their self-esteem and self-efficacy. We follow them throughout the school system, but it's pretty neat where each student has kind of a team of college students and community mentors who are sort of serve mm-hmm. To be these positive role models in their life. And we're seeing really great things with the students, but we're also seeing really positive outcomes with the community mentors and yeah. our college students as well. It's really mutually beneficial, and that's pretty rewarding to see.
Well, we're looking forward to all those great things that are going to happen in addition to all that's been happening. My guest today has been Dr. James Hodge, the director of CORE here at Penn State Barron. I'm Chancellor Ralph Ford. You've been listening to Barron Talks on Money Radio, WPSE, AM 1450, FM 107.1.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Join us again on Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. for an encore presentation of the Business Spotlight.